This is In Tune With Your Intuition, a space of discovering all things within the collective healing movement.
Discussing topics on mindfulness, spirituality, and our connection to the divine.
With your hosts, Kelsey Reffitt
and Alex Yonouches.
Hi guys, welcome back to another episode. This week I'm sitting down with my friend DC, Derek Cook Jr., and he actually plays professional basketball overseas. So I am so excited to kind of sit down with him, hear his background into how he got into his journey overseas. So if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, share a little bit about how you got started in basketball and kind of go from there.
Hey guys, I'm DC. Professionally, and I guess worldly known as Derek Cook Jr. Basketball wasn't the original path for me. I didn't get started until late. I was about 18 when I first got noticed for anything. Had a late growth spurt. Met a guy that ended up being my mentor named Sean Thompson. He decided that he would ask me if I cared about playing basketball. We kind of made jokes about it because I was more of a football player back then. But it developed a great relationship between me and him, and he just told me to come work out with him, put me through some like typical basketball drills, and then one day he said, "Do you want to work out in front of this college coach?" And I thought he was joking, but lo and behold, a coach was in the gym.
Interesting.
He was in the gym, and he was actually there recruiting a guy named Devon Branch, and he already knew he was going to sign Devon, but then Sean had asked him what he thought about me. And he just gave me a chance at a small junior college, bought me in as a red shirt, and the rest was kind of history from there.
That's wild, actually. Like, not just cool. Like, that's actually insane that that happened. Did you play sports growing up? Like, or did this just kind of, like, fall into your lap?
I mean...
And how tall are you? I just feel like you should also say that. I feel like that's needed.
Yeah. I grew up playing football. That was the sport I loved most. I was much shorter back then, so I wanted to be like a wide receiver. I wanted to do different kind of things. I liked the defensive end because you got to hit people. And then I'm 6'9" now, but my first growth spurt was from about 5'8" to 6'3", and I thought that was my final growth spurt. And then after high school, another 5-6 inches.
That's wild. I grew, and
I'm here now.
Okay, amazing. And where are you from?
Originally from Washington, D.C., but I grew up all throughout that whole DMV area. I grew up in PG County. I spent like a year or two in Montgomery County, but mostly was in D.C. and like Anacostia Park for most of my career, not career, but life.
So fast forward now, how long have you been playing overseas? Mm-hmm. And if you want to dive into how that kind of looks with like being recruited, mm-hmm. signing, and all of that good stuff.
I guess the best way to look at it is that overseas is not one vast thing like everybody makes it out to be. Like I think everybody who cares about the sport of basketball, mainly like the fans and stuff, they think once a player is in NBA, he's overseas, and then that's when it kind of they start diminishing that player's talent level or diminishing that player's worth or status or whatever. And the actual basketball players know that there isn't much difference in a talent level from people that are overseas to the people that are in the NBA. A lot of times it's just opportunities were different. Some people wanted more money. Some people didn't like the position they were getting. There's different guys I can name. Mike James is one of the more popular people that people have like followed lately, whereas like he was easily good enough to be in the NBA, mm-hmm. but he chose overseas.
Okay.
And so many guys have started to do that more because it just provides them a different opportunity to showcase what they believe their talent level is.
Okay. That's amazing. And I was kind of looking into different, like, how it's different. So I feel like the biggest, how do I want to explain it? And I know you can explain it better, but I feel like, do you have, like, a higher, I know you said the skill is about the same, but, like, do you feel like you focus on different skill techniques in that league versus the NBA?
No. So, I mean, luckily for me, I had my experience of NBA when I did the Phoenix Suns training camp, 2017, I think it was. So I got to see firsthand, just to compare for my own personal experience, compare the difference. And I think the NBA is about, I'll say 20 guys in the NBA per year are just leagues above anybody else in the world. There's about 20 to 25 guys. They're so good, no matter where they play at, they'll be great. Those are the Kevin Durant's, the Steph Curry's, the LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, rest in peace. Certain guys are just so good, they would never even touch overseas basketball. But then when you get to like the bottom 80% of the league, it really is just about situation and when they got their opportunity. It isn't so much talent level, because if you think about the game of basketball, it's shooting, it's IQ, it's defense, it's athleticism, those kind of things. That's a global thing. Mm-hmm. It's just that certain people don't get the exposure that they need to get noticed by certain GMs and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
So when it comes to like comparing and skill set, it's just a matter of where you are when. Because mm-hmm. if someone sees you and you're really good at 16, those GMs and all that are going to see your potential. If your potential doesn't show up until you're about 27, 28, what can you do? It's not like NBA GMs are going to say, hey, this 28-year-old I have to have on my team. So right. then people start getting into the different aspects of how can I get paid playing this game? And overseas has been the most efficient for a lot of guys because it allows them to build that resume in different countries and different leagues. And then when you start learning about the different leagues, you realize that it isn't the big gap that you once thought it was. And that's what some NBA guys are finding out during the World Cup, during the FIBA matches.
Okay.
They're playing against some of these guys and like, why aren't you in the league? And it's like, this is just where I'm at. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. That's really cool. Where was the first place that you got drafted into?
So my graduating class, I signed the first pro contract. Stupidly, but I did it. 2015, I signed to play in Greece.
Okay.
So I knew that I was going to Greece in like April. A lot of guys wait until like May, June, or right after they graduate. No NBA teams are looking, and they go. My agency at the time, they suggested it would be the right thing to do. So we went to First Division Greece. Right before I go there, I broke my finger. So oh, no. It was like literally 3 days before camp starts. So I come into camp, I have a broken finger, the team's upset. They're just like, well, we need you to do X, Y, Z. And you're like, well, I mean, a broken finger, I can only do so much. So it like started off my rookie season just with like a taint in the whole environment. And then after I come back from the finger, I wasn't even fully healed, but it's a finger. So they're saying like, oh, you can play on it. So after like 2 weeks, they're like, yeah, just wrap it up.
Oh my God.
Yeah, wrap it up and we'll play.
No.
But in that time, because I wasn't doing certain things, I was whatever, I had like a groin injury. And then like the team was like, you know what, we're just done. Like we can't deal with this anymore. You're a rookie too. So within like 3 months, the team was ready to move on. And
wow.
The fun fact about overseas, a lot of people that you would talk to that do this game or whatever, they'll tell you crazy stories. My replacement came into the gym while I was practicing. So just imagine, like, you're thinking, like, oh, that's a new teammate. Like, oh, nice to
no
meet you.
No big deal.
And you're finding out at the last second that he's coming to replace you. The team didn't even tell me they were getting
rid
of him.
Did they know?
The team?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're the ones making the transaction, but they're not going to tell the player. What kind of happens is they get who they want to get, and then they kind of bring you into the office afterwards, like, hey, we're no longer interested in keeping you.
That's crazy.
And then this is where you can kind of go into like contracts and stuff, because they're obligated to pay you. Okay. But every country is different. Some countries might treat you badly. They might take your Wi-Fi. They might, you know, everybody has different stories.
Wow. Okay.
But for me, I'm just always going to be a professional person. So like when I realized I wasn't the guy for them, I started calling my people back home. They were like, hey, the Suns are still interested. You can come play in their G League and it actually benefits you because you can bypass the whole draft process.
Okay.
So I did that, came to the, back then it was called the D-League, came to the team Bakersfield Jam and had a great breakout rookie season. And that led into like the NBA Summer League and all that other stuff.
Okay. Amazing. That's so cool. So when you typically, I guess, I know there's going to be like multiple since then you've been traveling and playing with different teams. But when you are like, how long is a season and what does that look like with I know it varies, I guess. Yeah. But is there like a certain amount of time you have to be there prior to when the season starts?
It really depends on what country you go to, what league you're in. It gets a little complex.
Okay.
But the general consensus of players go into Europe. The Europe market for most countries is about 9-10 months. So they're starting camp and stuff in August. Preseason starts September, and then the season kind of ends right around like that May, depending on if you're in playoffs or not. But then some places like France, you'll be there until like early July, late June.
Wow.
So it just depends on where you are, how their schedules are set up. Every country kind of has their own thing. And then you still have like FIBA, who kind of has like, it's like more like the international stuff. It's a little more complex, but then they have like certain breaks in which players go play for their national team, all this other stuff. So it gets complex, but for the most part, you're going to be planning to be gone about somewhere between 8 and 10 months a year.
Okay. Interesting. So how does that work with you and your relationships back home? Like, how does that affect some of them, if you don't mind sharing with?
No, I mean, it's been a journey for me. Like, I'm an open book at this stage in my career. I'm much older now, and I've accepted a lot of things that younger players are going to take time to accept. But you end up having to live a double life. Mm-hmm. It's the safest way kind of for your mental health and your peace is to separate yourself from home. Because the longer you are attached to home, you start feeling homesick. If someone has a wife or kids, they want their wife and kids with them. If they're playing bad, they want that support system. Some people have like their mom, their dad, and all this other stuff. Whatever they have as their familial support system or friends or whatever, you almost have to distance from that. One, because of time zones. So that's the first thing you have to get used to. Whether you're in Western Europe, where it's only like 6 hours or whatever, or you could be in Australia, whatever, where it's like 15 hours. Mm-hmm. You have to really embrace the environment you're in, or it will destroy your mental health.
Yeah. That honestly like makes sense, because I feel like you have to kind of compartmentalize it, because if not, like, yeah, like you said, like, you can't do both. You can't be in two places at once. Yeah, that is tough for sure. How many countries have you played in?
I want to say somewhere between 7 and 9.
Okay.
I'll just go and then we'll count them later. I guess I've done Greece, Canada, China, Italy, Israel, Germany, Australia. I think I named all of them.
Okay.
If I'm missing out something, I'm sorry for that team.
So next question, how do you deal with like language barriers? Do you speak multiple languages? How do you adapt to different environments that you're in? And then also, do your teammates, like, how does that work with your teammates? You know, very intrigued by that.
So it actually is easier than people might think. Basketball is a very universal sport now, and for the most part, English is something that is understood outside of like China and certain countries you go into, and certain cultures just doesn't want to speak English. So I know when I was in Greece, they just didn't want to speak English. They knew it. They learned it growing up. They just wasn't there. Think of it like a comfort thing. You might take 4 or 5 years of Spanish or something, but if you're not comfortable speaking it, when someone's speaking in that language, you revert back to what your domestic language is.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing that kind of like you have to understand. But then I don't speak other languages. I like to pretend I do. I'll say greetings every now and then just to remind myself. But understanding their languages are often easier than speaking it, because the tones, the different like sentence structures and stuff like that.
Okay.
But for the most part, it's not as hard as you think. It's just more of just like, if you want to learn to adapt, there's like Duolingo and all these other things you can practice with.
Okay, amazing. So probably you don't have a ton of time, but do you have a ton of like, or do you have downtime when during the season or when there's not practice? Do you explore the city and like, do you make new friends, or like, how does that look for you?
That's actually the safest route to go to enjoy that country, enjoy that city. I think if more players did that, they wouldn't be as unhappy, or they wouldn't be as excited to leave. If you just take the time to like go into the city, you might see someone that is, they're just friendly. You might meet a restaurant owner that's connected with the team without you knowing. But it's always good to be outgoing when you're in these countries, because everyone knows everyone. And the best thing you can have as a player is a good reputation, and when people speak good about your name when you're not in the room. So when I've gone to these countries, I'll go to restaurants, I'll meet the owner or the manager, whoever. I just want them to know, like, hey, I'm here playing basketball. I love your restaurant. If you ever need tickets to the game, let me know. But it builds this rapport that allows you to feel connected to the city versus the alternative. I'm just going to go to practice, go to my room, sleep, whatever, play video games, come back, practice. you'll be mentally exhausted by November.
Yeah.
And you'll drained. Be like, man, I just want to go home. So you have to embrace that culture you're in.
Yeah. Wow. I think that speaks volumes. I'm not sure. Have you always like had that practice, or did you like have to go through different like kind of like depressing times to like figure out you needed to like get out and explore?
Luckily for me, I had junior college and then college, two big culture shocks for me. So before 2010, I never left DC. Like outside of going to Florida or North Carolina for a family trip, I never got to experience any other culture. And then I go to Kansas, and it's a big culture shock in a town of 1,000 people. And then I go to Wyoming, where the percentage of black people at that time was like 1%. Mm. So those two culture shocks taught me how to adapt into unfamiliar or uncomfortable environments. So now when I go overseas, it's effortless for me to just go, start with a smile. Hey, how are you? I'm DC, XYZ. Oh, yeah, I play basketball here. Come to a game. Would love to have your support. And before you know it, you start building friends, all these different things. It makes that place like a home.
Mm, I love that. I think that's beautifully said, because I think a lot of people, and I'm sure you can kind of just touch on just with living overseas, I feel like so many people are curious about living abroad or like moving to a new city. And I think it's just like when thinking about that, like what's like the best advice you can give someone that like wants to move overseas and like experience something new? Like I know getting out and getting in the culture, but like for someone that doesn't have, you know, like basketball or something to be able to be like, hey, this is what I'm connected to, like what do you think? I don't know if that makes sense, but like what do you think would be the best advice for someone?
I think the best advice I can give to someone sports related or not sports related is to almost not so much forget about your practices and your culture, but like don't use it as like a basis of importance. So a lot of Americans, especially, they go places and they kind of think it's the American way. They go there demanding stuff. I've seen players or whatever say speak English. And it's like, not their dominant. But you just have to really detach yourself from all you've known, which isn't, it's not easy. I'm not saying it's an easy thing. But regardless of who you are, if you go to Italy, if you go to Germany, if you go to one of these places, yes, you can speak English because that's your like main language, but try to get to meet someone on their foundational level. The same way when someone comes here, you don't want them to teach you their Asian practices or their whatever, that you want them to meet you on your English basic level. Mm-hmm. So try to do the same thing when you are in other cultures. So for someone who wants to travel abroad, go live abroad for school or whatever, the first thing you can do is just try to embrace that culture for what it is.
Mm. I think that's beautiful. And I think, unfortunately, like Americans really are set in their ways. But I think the more we can like encourage people to travel and experience even different cultures within the state, because I had the same thing happen to me growing up in Kansas and then moving to San Francisco. That was a huge, huge culture shock. So I think like getting out and experiencing different environments is like so important in order to like expand and to grow into different areas of your life. So I love that perspective. Thank you for sharing that.
Of course.
Is there anything that you like want to touch on, struggles or like,
I mean, any? It depends on what level you want to go from. If you want to go from a personal level, a business level, a life level, mental health level, there's a lot of aspects you can kind of dive into. For me, I've experienced it all. So at this point, for the people who know me, especially people who know me from overseas, they know that I'm just a positive person. I don't allow negativity to take over me, because once you do, your body starts reacting to it and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, like, I'm an open book. When you have questions, I'm just going to give you the positive outlook on it, because I believe there isn't much negativity in seeing the world.
Oh, okay. I love that. So have you always had that outlook, or did you have something shift you into that headspace?
I think I had to do a lot of learning, especially early in my career. I wasn't as experienced mentally, and I didn't see these countries and these places. So I would go places like I told you, the Greece situation. I'm blaming the team. I'm like, oh, they don't like me. They don't want to trust me to be out there, blah, blah, blah. They're just not playing me. And I never took it upon myself to see it from their perspective. They were expecting a high, strong, athletic guy. And I come in with a broken finger and I can't dunk as hard anymore. or I'm not doing what they kind of got me for. So on a, from a business level, if you hire somebody to do something and they don't do that thing, mm-hmm. and from a business level, you have to kind of go separate ways. But I mean, a lot of it just came from just learning from mistakes, learning from experiences. And the best thing I always learn to do is to learn how to have conversations mm-hmm. that are uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's the best way to kind of destroy any negative narrative you might have. Mm-hmm. Some people might lie, like that's part of the game or whatever. But if I can have this conversation with the coach or the GM, hey, what are you thinking? What is your vision for me on this team? Or how can I help things be better? How can I mesh people better? And they'll give you their two cents. And even if they lie or if they're full of it or whatever, at least you know you've made that attempt. Mm-hmm. Whereas like now when you go to talk to your agent, you're like, hey, I talked to this guy and this is what he said, X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
And it sucks that it goes the way it does sometimes in this business, but at least you got your piece off. You connected with that person. And now mm-hmm. what I've had happen in my career, because I've been taking off 2-3 teams now, but the players, I mean, not the players, the coaches have a sense of guilt because it's like, I didn't get more out of this guy and he did nothing wrong. He was professional. He showed up on time every day. He wasn't outside every night. He was always going to work out. So I did all the stuff right. But I mean, from a basketball standpoint, it didn't work out. So then the GM or whoever decides we want to go a different route. But every time I've left the team, his coach is like, hey, man, I just loved having you around. Your positive energy, X, Y, Z. But then that built my reputation over my career. Mm-hmm. So now when players, I mean, teams call asking about me, people are saying glowing things. Oh, man, TC, you're going to love him. He works hard in the weight room. He first at practice, last elite. They're going to say good things about me mm-hmm. because outside of from a skill set, there isn't really much anything negative they can say.
I love that. I think it's I love that that's your headspace because I think it's very rare to meet people like you. And I feel like you're a very grounded individual. So I appreciate that a lot. Do you mind me asking what like your religious beliefs are, or like what your spiritual upbringing was or is and what you believe in?
Yeah, for sure. I grew up a Christian Baptist. I had a family church my whole life. We were in church every Sunday, Bible study on Wednesdays. When I was very young, choir rehearsal, even though we couldn't sing, you still had to go to choir rehearsal. But I grew up very spiritual, very religious. And I do believe that God controls everything in my life and in everyone's life. Some people aren't as spiritual or they believe that they have control. And I think life has taught people that you're not as in much control as you think you are. Mm-hmm. And like I always tell some players who go through heartache, go through physical pains, injuries, whatever, your destiny is already written. It mm-hmm. might not be as you see it or you want to see it, but it's already written. You just have to remain faithful, do your due diligence, be positive, and good things will come into your life. The problem is, from my experience, people only see one vision for mm-hmm. themselves. So if it's basketball, I'm going to be the best basketball player and I'm going to be da 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 da, whatever they say. But what the reality is, sometimes basketball opens the door for that opportunity in your life. You might mm-hmm. meet your business partner do basketball. A lot of players have met their wives, their whatever, through basketball. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you got to see that platform you're on as just the next door to the next opportunity in life.
Yeah. And I think that's perfectly said because there's always this like idea that there's like this end goal, but I think it's sometimes there's just like our goals for right now, because then it's going to open opportunities for that next level. And I think even looking like with basketball and like I know we've kind of talked about this like off the podcast, but like what are some goals or things that you think you're going to want to lean into once your career in this slows down?
I think the beauty and journey of life should be creating as much passive income and experiences you can without tying yourself to just one thing. Mm-hmm. So that's not a knock on anybody who does a 9-to-5 or anybody who stays with one company their whole life. If that's your path and your wishes, fine. I believe for me, my journey and path is to connect people. Mm-hmm. I've done a great job at it up until this point. I just have to find a way to not even so much profit off of it, but more so make life sustainable. Because for me, I've made good money in my career. I've put away savings. I've put away certain investments that if all else fails, I can take care of myself for a few years. The point isn't that, though. For me, the point is, how can I connect, let's say, you to more basketball players? How can I connect this business to another business? So I work with Explosive Athletes Institute and it's by far the best human I've ever worked with. His name is Sid Swarma. But he's by far the best human I've ever encountered. And my whole last 4 or 5 years, I've been thinking, how can I just bring more business his way? Because he's just like this really humble guy. He doesn't ask for much.
Yeah.
Doesn't, never complains. He just like is there to help people. Mm-hmm. So when I get to experience that, I'm like, I wonder if that's my calling. I wonder if I'm supposed to take the next 11, 12, 13 year old kid who's leaving middle school, going into high school, doesn't know what they want to do with their life. And I say, it didn't start for me till 18. So if you don't have it figured out yet, that's okay. Mm-hmm. And then the beauty of life and success, it's never what you know, it's who you know.
Yeah.
Who you know gets you through anything in life. What you know gets you to last there, but who you know gets you to that door.
Yeah.
You might meet a billionaire, millionaire, whatever, and they're like, I like your energy. I want you to run this company for me. They didn't ask for your resume, but your energy sometimes speaks for you.
Yeah.
So for me, everywhere I go, positive energy, and when it comes to life after basketball, that's how I'll take it. I'll get into real estate, have some passive income, make sure I'm making like affordable housing, all these different things to like keep the money coming in.
Yeah.
But then from like a passion standpoint, it'll be like consultation, helping people transition to different factors in life, different aspects of life, and just how can I help the next generation come up?
Oh, wow. I'm so excited for you. Like, I can't wait. I can see it now. I feel like you're going to be like this, like such a great mentor for these kids. And like, I just feel like you have a lot of different goals and like passions, and I know that's going to come through for you. So I'm excited to see you step into that after everything. But I just want to say thank you for sitting down and having like a brief conversation with me. Is there anything that you want to like end on? I know like that was beautiful, so it was a good ending note, but if there's any like last little thing you want to leave for my listeners.
Life is what you make it. Take it one step at a time and see where you end up at.
Amazing. Thank you.